From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 29th day of March 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson. We'll check in on the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And as we wrap up our time together, we'll move Drew a little earlier in the session because we went a bit long when I recorded him earlier today. We'll talk with Jerry Gahlke in the last segment of the afternoon of the Gahlke Group. He has a surprisingly big number for the soybean acreage on the reports that are due out from USDA on Friday at 11 a.m. We'll discuss all of that today right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 29th day of March. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson and has some updates for us as we look forward to the Friday reports from the United States Department of Agriculture. They're due out at 11 a.m. Central Time. Check out our website, willag.org, at that time. I'll have my Twitter feed embedded there, and those numbers will come up as quickly as I can get to them. I take it you've been watching these numbers, as all of the trade has, pretty closely. You want to start with the grain stocks report for me and kind of give me your assessment very quickly, Jackie. And, oh, thanks for being with us today, too.
Well, thank you, Todd, for having me. Grain stocks is always where I start, because to me that's the most important report that's coming out here. It's the only report that we've got that actually shows actual numbers. So the estimates for grain stocks are 8.53 versus 7.2 last year for corn. On beans, we're looking at 1.68 versus 1.53 last year. And on wheat, 1.63 versus 1.37 last year. You know, sound familiar? Sound a lot like the USDA report? Well, you would expect it to be like that. But they're estimating we had a 1.5 million bushel corn use for feed and about 1.38 for ethanol. So, you know, those are really good numbers. But, you know, you look at this trending stocks higher even after we've had very robust export sales. And then, of course, you and I have talked plenty about South America's record crops, you know. So I think that depending upon how it comes in and joins with the acreage report on Friday, we could see a pretty good break in the market, even though we've already had somewhat of a break. This, I think, will offer a buying opportunity possibly for, weather concerns, because we need those speculators to come in here and always tell us that we're going to have a drought, even if we're not going to have a drought. You just never know. And I think everyone's aware of the fact that this acreage report is just that. Yield is more important than acreage, but this is a place for us to start, you know. So when Friday morning rolls around, average guesses that I have are 91 million for corn. You know, when the forum came out last month, they were at 90, and last year we had 94 million acres. Beans, 88.2 is the average guess. Forum was at 88. Last year we had 83.4. Wheat is currently at 46.1 on the guesses, 46 at the forum. Last year, 50.15. And I included cotton in this, Todd, because, you know, those are the majors. And cotton, 11.4. At the forum, they said 11, and last year we only had 10.1. So the reason I included cotton is because from going to the forum for so many years and following those numbers, they're always low when they come out with their numbers, at least a couple million, sometimes 3 million. So they came out at 235 million acres, basically, for those four major crops. When you look at the guesses, they're at 236.7. So you can tell that all of us as analysts understand that that's the way it is from the forum. And so we're already guessing 1.7 million higher than what the forum was at. But when you look at the numbers from last year, there's like a million acres still floating around out there. So, you know, could this report really hold a surprise? You know, the big surprise everybody's expecting, or the big thing everybody's expecting, is huge bean acres. I think that that's probably somewhat realistic, but I don't think that farmers are going to necessarily go away from their 50-50 rotation. And the other thing that plays into this, as far as I'm concerned, there's a couple of things, one being spring weather, of course. I'm a firm believer that early spring, lots of corn. Late wet spring, lots of beans. But at the same time, you know, we have insurance prices that, to me, really would have me thinking that if I get a chance to plant more corn acres, I'm going to do that. And so even though beans are at 1019 and corn bean at 396, we know that beans just have not been able to produce the record yields that we've seen on corn. So I guess we'll have to wait until 11 o'clock on Friday to get the numbers, but I think it could be a very, very interesting report.
So let me turn your attention away from the Friday USDA reports for a moment, because I figure you've been watching what's happened in South America with JBS and their meat exports. Do you have any assessment of what that really means or thoughts on how it moves into the global marketplace?
Well, you know, Todd, I think one of the things that sometimes is easily forgotten is the importance of exports and how something can just throw a wrench into it so quickly. When you look at this meat scandal, in a matter of a week, you know, they had 25 markets, you know, had placed some sort of restriction on meat imports coming out of Brazil. Now, China lifted its restriction on Monday after what they termed as a frantic negotiation. What do you think frantic negotiation means other than they're going to pay less? You know, there are no slaughterhouses right now that are taking a lot of the birds down there. So there's a lot of concerns that, you know, these buildings, as these turkeys and poultry continue to grow, they're just, these barns aren't meant to house mature birds. And, you know, the biggest problem I think that they see is meat that's sitting on the ocean already, meat that's sitting in ports already. And if you look at the Brazilian Animal Protein Association came out and they said poultry and pork exports lost $40 million the first week. That's 22% of their weekly sales expectations of $185 million. Can you imagine that? That's just in their production side. And I think the thing that really pushed things along is, you know, the majority of the exports that are being hit right now, of course, are pork and poultry. I think there are only two that are actually beef. But China accepted Australian beef, and that certainly put pressure on them. Hong Kong, they removed all the Brazilian meat out of their markets, and Hong Kong McDonald's and KFC followed suit. That has to hurt. JBS announced that they've had a 35% drop in meat processing. You know, this is something that's extremely, extremely serious. And, you know, they're doing damage control right now, but it's a situation where it's going to hurt no matter how you look at it. And so I think the bottom line for us, Todd, and why I really wanted to talk about it was that, you know, we being the U.S., you know, we need to make sure that our export products remain above reproach. And this is just a really good example of how quickly a market can be lost or can be diluted and taken over by a competitor.
Any other things that you've got on your list this week that we ought to talk about?
Well, I thought I saw something that I thought was really interesting in Kevin Van Trump's report. If our listeners aren't reading it, they should, because he's just got a lot of great things in there. But the Tax Foundation laid to rest a myth we keep hearing, and I thought this was so interesting. The top 1%, in other words, the richest Americans in the United States, pay 39.5% of all federal taxes collected. In other words, they paid $542.64 billion out of the $1.37 trillion. That's been collected yearly now. So, you know, I thought that was just absolutely amazing because, you know, if you listen to the pundits, they certainly don't make it sound like that. And so just a fact, I thought that was interesting. And if you go beyond this and you look at the next 5% and the majority of taxes are paid by the wealthier people, and which only makes sense when you come right down to it. But I just thought that was an interesting fact.
Hey, you always do the best research. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Jackie Vank. She's with Stuart Peterson. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. In today's agricultural news, the Senate Agriculture Committee will hold a business meeting today to consider the nomination of Sonny Perdue as Secretary of Agriculture for the United States. A favorable vote for Perdue will move the former Georgia governor a step closer to taking his post at the USDA. It's unclear, however, whether the full Senate will then move to confirm Perdue before it leaves for its two-week April recess at the end of next week. The Atlanta Constitution Journal reports that if senators do not get to Perdue before they leave, he will not be able to get sworn in until the last week of April at the earliest. When asked if the Senate will confirm Perdue before the Easter break, Chairman Roberts replied, "Hope springs eternal." Well, the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Pork Producers Council this week closed the final chapter of their lawsuit challenging the EPA's release of farmer and rancher personal information. A federal judge has approved a settlement that secures the private information of thousands of livestock and poultry farmers in 36 states. AFBF and NPPC filed the lawsuit in 2013 after EPA released a compilation of spreadsheets containing personal information about farmers and ranchers in 29 states who raise livestock and poultry. And finally today, the ranking member of the House Ag Subcommittee on Nutrition says there will be no farm bill without the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, otherwise known as SNAP. Democrat James McGovern of Massachusetts, at the opening of a hearing titled "The Next Farm Bill, The Future of SNAP," warned lawmakers by saying, "Don't even think of separating the nutrition title from the farm bill." He says such a move would be a huge mistake and guarantee there would be no farm bill if the committee separates SNAP from the farm bill. Further, he wanted the House Agriculture Committee to not screw around with the program. McGovern says there is no reason to undermine SNAP through structural changes or further restrictions. McGovern says he has read reports that the committee may consider changing provisions to able-bodied adults without dependents. However, he says the committee needs to find a way to make SNAP better, including increasing SNAP benefits. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Yesterday, we heard from the Soybean Association about the presentations they made on the Title I programs, or the safety net programs for corn, soybeans, wheat, and other commodities. The group stressed that the renewable fuel standard, which has been under attack by some in Congress, are also indispensable, especially according to the National Corn Growers Association President Wesley Spurlock.
Last year, 4.2 billion bushels of corn produced more than 15 billion gallons of ethanol and return more than 1 billion bushels of high-quality feed back to the livestock industry. Keeping the RFS on schedule provides more certainty, which leads to more demand for ethanol and corn.
And then there's trade, which farm groups say could be compromised while renegotiating the North American Free Trade Agreement, especially if the administration succeeds in imposing a 20% tax on imports from Mexico. The president of the National Wheat Growers Association, David Sheem, is concerned.
Within the wheat industry, we have a huge concern over this. With over 50% of our wheat that is exported out of this country, this absolutely factors into a huge component of the price that our farmers are able to receive for their product.
The commodity groups say they would not mind if the now defunct Trans-Pacific Partnership were used as a template for future bilateral deals with countries like Japan, while any modernizing of NAFTA is done without jeopardizing 20 years of gains for U.S. farm exports. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. For Wednesday afternoon, Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, thanks for being with us. Can you tell me a little bit about the rainfall that we've had across the hard red winter wheat growing regions of the nation and what impact it has had?
Well, certainly it has been a significant event so far. What we have picked up significantly has been mostly confined in the last 24 hours. We saw widespread precipitation occur here just since yesterday. And much of the region from Kansas southward into the Texas Panhandle and into north central parts of Texas, actually, I have seen anywhere from 1 to 2 and some localized 3 to 5 inch amounts of rain just from this one storm system alone. And of course, earlier last weekend, we saw some rain occur across parts of the region. It was disfavoring the southwest. But this event that occurred last night certainly has brought significant moisture to southwestern parts of wheat country, which was an area of great concern because it had been the hottest area. And now it is in a state of recovery, I guess. As we go forward through the next week, the week and a half, we've got at least 3 storm systems still yet to come. And collectively, they will produce another 1 to 3 inches of rain across the production region. So I don't think we'll be talking too much about dryness in hard red winter wheat country again for a while.
And spring does change things. Farmers were thinking here, hey, will that drought move into our area? However, my guess is that spring will change things here as well. And well, farmers would like to start planting sometime in that fall, second week of April. Will they get an opportunity?
I think there's going to be some opportunity, yes. So the wet weather bias that we're in the midst of right now will last for another full week. By the time we get to the end of next week, we'll probably see a drier tendency starting to evolve. It's not something that's going to prevail for any great length of time, but a little break in the program here. And that should give us a chance to warm up to a little bit. And so the combination should set the stage for a little bit better opportunity for that first few seeds to be put into the ground across the lower Midwest. But I do think we will go back into some more wet, biased conditions a little bit later in April and periodically even in May. So it's not necessarily going to be a real fast planting season, but I don't think we've got much to complain about as far as having a lack of moisture for the region. We should do very well when we do have those warmer, drier days.
Are you of a mind that it will be warmer than usual?
It will be at times. I think that the greatest deviations from normal temperature are behind us now, that we will have some warmer tendencies, but it's not going to be nearly as far above average as it has been. These periods of rainy weather will hold the temperatures back a little bit. I do think that when we go out a few weeks down the road, we'll get warm again relative to normal. I'm really most concerned about July because there's a tendency for these very warm Februaries like we had this year are often followed by a warm July. And that can be a little bit of a threat to some of our production potential if indeed we do get hot during that month. So we're kind of watching that. But I don't think we're going to see large unseasonably hot days before we get to that point in time.
So we started with the hard red winter wheat in the United States. Can we move to the Black Sea, talk about Russia and the wheat growing regions and Ukraine and there, please?
Absolutely. One of the biggest issues going on in Russia right now is that they are falling back into a colder, biased environment. Portions of Russia have a tremendous amount of snow still left on the ground. It's not in the south or the extreme west, but the rest of the production area is quite deeply buried in snow still, and they were doing very well in melting some of that down until this week, and now it's turning cooler again. They're actually getting some new snowfall to occur, and we're going to see waves of snow continuing for at least the next 7 days. So some of that part of the world is going to take a little bit of a step back and a longer period before they're going to be able to get into the fields. There's still a fair amount of potential here that some flooding might be an issue for them as well. So we're going to continue to watch that, but it will be cold over there for a while. And what's interesting is the last time we got cold like this, we also got cold about 10 days afterwards. So we're going to watch real closely and see what happens when we get into mid-April.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us today, Drew.
All right. Well, have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner, of course, is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We've already talked about the weather forecast with Drew Lerner. That gives us time to talk with Jerry Gulkey of the Gulkey Group out of Northern Illinois. Hey, Jerry, thanks for being with us. I want to talk about the numbers you've been releasing for this upcoming acreage figure because, well, they're pretty surprising. You have, in fact, a really big bean number at 92.5 million acres. Just for reference, the trade average for the group that I have is 88.7, so you're way above everybody else. How'd you get there?
Some big moves, actually, in Iowa. You've got some corn-on-corn guys that maybe planted a few acres of beans a year or so ago, and now they've got a good yield, and they're saying, you know, this corn thing doesn't work. You just spotted me an insurance a deal that's better. In fact, we saw our numbers back in January already when we, I think we talked to our clients about them in early February. But that, and then you've got, we see a big move out of spring wheat in North Dakota. You know, we haven't planted it up there ourselves in 5 or 6 years. I mean, they probably never will plant it. There's more and more people getting more enamored about it. And, you know, the guy, all you got to do is step across the border and then into Canada, that farmer looks the same as the guy on the other side of the border, 6 feet away. They're thinking the same way. We've got clients in Saskatchewan that don't want to try beans, but that's another country, but that's another problem there. But we also see it in Nebraska. You got a lot of corn acres there, corn on corn. You know, a small percentage of a big number is a big number acres-wise in the beans. But North Dakota, not much change in corn, but a big change out of spring wheat and other stuff. Canola is not cheap to grow. And soybeans just make it easier, especially in the Red River Valley where they get a decent crop. We saw switches. I guess in all our clients, it brings me back to 2007 when we were talking about 15 million acres more corn. People thought we were nuts, but yet every one of our clients all over the country, from 500 acres to 5,000 to 50,000 acres, we're moving 10%, 9 or 10% of their acres. And that's how we got there. And looking at ours this year, that's how we got there as well. Everybody across the board is seeing, there's some that are already 50-50, they're hanging in there. But the big acres, the guys that are, we're corn on corn, are moving some of that. Actually, our number was higher than that. It was a lot higher than that. So I went through and I threw out some guys that were 10,000 acre farmers going all beans or something. You know what? You hear it, you don't know if they're really going to do it. And that's how we got that. I just couldn't get below 92.5. And so I hated to even print that. But I think there's a bigger switch coming than what we believe. And in corn acres, I'm thinking when we're all done, we'll be below 89 million, but we'll see what happens there. That may be a little more difficult, but it's the gravitation out of wheat acres in particular, a lot more out of the hard red winter wheat, and maybe even bigger moves from soft wheat to beans and hard wheat, some cotton in some of those states that can grow cotton. So it just, you know, when you look at the numbers, guys told me, he said, you know, one guy called me, he said, with all due respect, he said, you got to be an idiot not to plant some beans, he said, because the market's telling you so, and I got a good insurance program behind me, and I want to be around when the good times roll again, so we'll see. It could make for an interesting opportunity thereafter, you know.
So if we put 92.5 million in, and you've got a supply and demand sheet that says 514 million bushels for the carryout for A17-18, what's that do to price, in your opinion?
We probably go down, you know, we could take I don't know if we got, you know, if our numbers are right, certainly for a few minutes, you're going to trade, you could trade a limit lower. Then you get guys looking the other way, you got weather concerns. Now is a poor time really to be selling the bottoms. But you look at 510 million. And again, a lot of people don't talk about it. They look at our carryover in the United States and want to risk their whole farm on that or risk somebody else's farm. When you look at 500 million bushels compared to the total global production, South America, North America, it isn't really that much should somebody else have a problem. And nobody talks about it. We watch it all along we increase demand globally about 300 to 350 million bushels, or about 6 million acres, 7 million acres. It's got to come from somewhere. It's not going to come out of Brazil at $7 to $8 like some people think. And in the United States, we're kind of a mature country. You know, we don't have any more CRP to bring out. So somebody along the way is going to have to plant that. And so far we've been able to grow a little bit more than what we need in South America and North America, but you don't need much of a hiccup in either country. And if we would grow, we would grow 46 bushels an acre and not 48 or 49. Suddenly, July and August, suddenly, you know, we'd be saying, boy, I'm glad we grew 92 million. At least we got 300 or 250 million bushels left over. So to me, I like beans having a better opportunity of rallying back out of whatever low we come up with than I would probably corn, unless corn is our numbers. And then people forget also that if we do plant, even that 90 million, a lot of people are bunched around. That's about 800 or 900 million bushels less than last year. You're not increasing supply. And I think after the crop, if it were 90, I think you got to look at it and say, we don't have a whole lot of room for a hiccup. 170 bushels, 170.7 versus say 166, which is still a good yield. You know, 6-7 years ago, we would have you know, we'd have crawled across a bed of nails just to hear somebody tell us we had 166 bushels an acre. That solves the problem for corn as well. And then you get down to where you eliminate that carryover, gets down to 1.6 or 1.7. So, you know, all good intentions are, you know, are great, but it's going to boil down to weather again to see what kind of a yield are we going to pencil behind whatever acres we come up with. So we got an opportunity, I think, for farmers to control their destiny. And if, you know, like I tell guys, I say, well, if you think they're going to plant beans, then I'm going to plant corn. And I say, well, you can run against the grain if you want, but what if you're wrong? You better have a plan in mind. So I think we take the market signals and we educate the Brazilians on what a cheap price of beans may be and have them hedged. And then corn, and now what? You know, I think if we're right about our numbers, we get below 89, you got probably a chance at $4.50 to $5 on a weather problem this summer that nobody thinks is coming.
Hey, Jerry, thanks so much. Have a great day, and we'll talk with you again soon.
You bet. Thank you.
That, of course, is Jerry Gulke. He is with the Gulke Group. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.